go.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1 Okay. And we're back. So this time I'm not with Ben. So I'm with another one of my brothers who is actually my like photographer slash videographer. But before we get started, it is absolutely pouring outside, so yeah. I apologize if you hear rain. And this podcast is going to be a little bit different. It's still going to be a lot about striped bass fishing, but it's actually going to go more into how do you take, you know, good quality photos, and then also like, or like photos slash videography, like for fishing. And then we'll go into some really awesome stuff that's going on behind the scenes. So the cool thing is me and Gus, pretty much run what, I mean, I don't really like to call it the company, but like, yeah. I don't know what else you'd call it.
Yeah.
So we pretty much run everything behind the scenes as far as like, I run the Instagram, but, as far as the photos and like videos and YouTube channel, he does a lot of work for me on that stuff. So, and he's helped so much with the podcast, and this podcast is going to be a lot higher quality, than other podcasts because he's here. So it's just like, this is stuff that's going to change probably closer to the spring when he's out of school. Yeah. But, once it's like comes springtime, a lot, our quality and like, you know, pictures and, you know, video and whatnot is going to go up. So, I guess we should get right into it. One big question that I get a lot of the time, especially for you, or I guess in general, is what camera do you use, like, for the pictures and video? I get that question a lot. So,
the camera I use is the Panasonic Lumix GH5, and this camera, I normally use it with a 12 to 35 millimeter lens, which it gives me a good range. It might seem like a very wide lens, especially if you're used to full frame cameras, but because it has a crop sensor, the lens functions more like about double what the focal length would be on a full frame camera.
Yeah. So for me and for what we do is I take a lot of pictures at night, and that's a big question that I get is how do you take good photos at night, because so many people struggle at taking good photos at night. So I wanted you to talk about a little bit how, what settings do you put your camera at, and what makes like a good photo at night?
So a lot of like what we've run into over the years, like I've been out there filming you and taking pictures a lot over the past like 3 years, and the problem that we run into is the fact that the best times for fishing are the worst times for filming and taking pictures. So like you'll be out there in a storm at night, and that's obviously the worst time because you have the least light and the worst conditions to have an expensive camera out there in the waves and the like rain and everything. But it's something that you sort of have to deal with if you're going to be out there taking pictures. And I think we've sort of figured out how to deal with it for the most part. And in that we use a, because the, we use an on-camera flash that like will slide into the hot shoe. And it gives us a little bit, it gives us better, better lighting, especially for those photos that are of you out there. And in terms of video, we have like a big sort of light panel. I need to get one of that that's has higher power. But the flash we use, I initially got it when I had a Nikon camera that I was using for most of my like photography stuff. And it communicated really well with that camera. Like it would change the settings based on like how far you would zoom the lens in, and it would just, it worked really well with like adjusting with the camera settings. But the on the GH5, that flash has trouble, so I need to get a new one. But like when we're out there, I'll normally set the flash to like basically as bright as it'll go. And my camera settings, I set it basically how I would set it during the day. So I have like an 80th of a second shutter speed, and I have the aperture wide open. And then in terms of ISO, I try to keep that as limited as I can while still taking
a
good picture.
So for those of you, or for me as well, so what is like aperture and what is like ISO?
So I don't know. I'll give you sort of the summarized version. And this is something that if you get into photography, you'll learn very quickly, is that so when you're taking a picture, there are three settings that sort of interact with each other. You have ISO, shutter speed, and aperture. So let's start with ISO. That's basically how sensitive the camera sensor is. So back when people used like film cameras the majority of the time, ISO was sort of built into the film that they were taking the picture on, so it was how sensitive the actual film was. But now that we have digital cameras, the sensor, it's basically sort of how much it's going to react to the light that comes into the camera, because like photography is all about, and video is all about, light and how much light goes into the camera and how it goes into the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So when you crank up your ISO, you're basically telling it, if you get just a little bit of light, then like brighten up that pixel even more. And so like a lot of times if you crank the ISO up, then you'll get a lot of noise because it'll look at something that would be black and then try to interpret some kind of color out of that. And that's where you get the noise in areas that you want to just be like clean. So then moving on to aperture. Aperture is physically in the lens. It's almost like your pupil in your eye. Like you can think of a camera like the human eye, where you have the lens and then you have the pupil, which is the aperture, and then you have the back of your eye where it's actually sensing the light information coming into the camera. So the aperture is a physical hole. And when you open up the aperture, which is the lower numbers, it's kind of counterintuitive. So if an aperture is a lower number, then the pupil is open even wider. And when it's a higher number, then it's closed down.
So when it's dark out, it's...
You want it to be as far open as possible.
And then if it's super bright out, it's...
Yeah, it's much smaller. Right. And the way that that works is, so it's letting in more light, but when it lets in more light, it also is a shallower depth of field, so you get more blur in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely at night, you're trying to take in as much information as possible. And so you want the aperture as far open as it can go, because you want the image to be usable and bright enough to be able to see stuff. And then the last thing is shutter speed. So that's how long the sensor is recording information for. So, but the thing about shutter speed is that the longer you have the shutter open, it's recording this information on top of itself. So if you were to take a long exposure photo during the day, well, first of all, it would be difficult because you'd get so much information that you'd end up with just a white frame. But if you are able to see the things in the frame and you move the camera around at all, everything will be recorded on top of itself, so it gets all blurry. And you can use this to your advantage in a lot of situations, but at night, the flash helps, because if the flash isn't on, then it's dark and you aren't going to be able to see anything. Mm-hmm. So the flash basically, even if you have a slightly longer shutter speed, it'll record just that moment that the flash goes off, because there's no information coming into the camera outside of the flash.
One thing that I want to think that I thought was kind of interesting, and it kind of works the same way, is when you were actually testing the flash out and it was really dark out, when it would flash, you would, that like an image, a bright image of what was going on like out, like in the world, I guess, like was kind of burned into my eyes. When you like look into a bright light and then close your eyes and you can see that like image there, it was the same thing when I was looking straight out at all these rocks. If I closed my eyes, I could see all those rocks burned into my eyes.
Yeah, because again, like the camera is modeled after the human eye, or after an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it works and the way that it focuses light onto the sensor, and uses that aperture to adjust how much light it's letting in. Like, it's like if you look at someone's eyes, if you like turn off the lights and then you look into someone's eyes and turn the lights back on, you can see their pupil shrinking down because it was initially super wide trying to get as much light information as possible. Then the lights come on and it shrinks down because you need to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to tell a story about when it was the first time you came out to take pictures and video for me, and for this year, I guess, or this past season. And it was really cool because I ended up catching the biggest bass of my season that night. And I just want to go into that story because I think I told it a little bit, but I mean, seeing it from his perspective, I think is going to be kind of interesting. So this night, the night before, I caught a 40 pounder, and it was like on the new moon. I caught a 40 pounder. It was the day after the new moon. I go to my spot that I've been getting a lot of really nice fish in. And we spent all day that day trying to track down eels. I mean, we drove all over creation trying to find eels, and we finally did. And we went out to the spot, and it was probably at sunset, and we were trying to figure out like exactly how this is going to work, and where we were going to take photos of the fish. And so I started out, it was pretty slow. I mean, I wasn't getting a whole lot of action. I caught maybe two fish, and one was like 28 inches. The other one was like 30 inches. And the 30 incher, I was like, whatever, screw it. I'm going to come in. This is just after it first got dark. I'm going to come in and we can like practice on this smaller bass. And it was pretty neat because where we were fishing, there was a tide pool that was not really a tide pool. It was just like a group of boulders like that were like closing off this area where water was coming in. So I was like, okay, so if I get a big fish, what I'm going to do is get the fish. I'm going to bring it into this group of boulders. There's fresh water coming in and out to keep the bass nice and healthy. I'll grab the bass. I'll pick it up. I'll take a few photos with it. We can put it back in the water between photos, and we can revive it and then release it nice and healthy. So that was our plan. And, it was hilarious because maybe 15 casts after I hooked into that, 30 incher, I hooked into this amazingly large bass. And it was funny because I hooked this fish and it rises up to the surface, and I was like, okay, and started thrashing around. I was like, okay, this is going to be a good bass. Because generally when you hook a big bass, and I've talked about this in other podcasts, what happens is the bass will rise up to the surface of the water and it will thrash around, and then it will take off on this run, which is like, which you can kind of tell how big the fish is when it goes off to that run. Generally what will happen is a really big bass will do one, like a 15 or like I'd say 25 pound bass will take one really good run and then maybe another short run. Like a 30 pound bass will take 2 to 3 really, like one really good run, one slightly shorter run, then one slightly shorter run, and then you can get them in. And if it's like a 40 pound bass, it'll take 3 solid runs. And the reason I'm saying this, like the 3 solid runs, is I fight my fish extremely, extremely hard. Like I fish very heavy gear, as I've talked about in other podcasts, but I have my VSX 200 Van Stahl with the drag locked down as much as it will go when I fish with eels in general. So generally, if it's a 40 pound bass, it's doing 3 runs that are about 15 to 20 yards. But in between the runs, I gain a little bit of line. And I'm fishing pretty shallow boulder field at this time, so that's why the bass generally come up and thrash on the surface. So I hook into this fish. It takes off really hard for its first big run. It slows down, and I reel up a little bit. It takes off again, and by that second run, it took so much. It like did another 25-yard like run, and I started screaming. I was like, it's another 40 pounder. And I don't know what you were
saying. So we're out there, it's the pitch dark, so, and he's out, like the way that where we're fishing, there's sort of this sort of boulders, and then there's another sort of boulder like farther out, and you had waded out to that boulder. I'm not trying to take my like expensive camera out that far, so I'm back like a little bit closer to shore, and I can hear you yelling, but I can't see anything because it's just pitch dark. And so I take a couple photos with the flash on, and so I'm just looking at what's going on through my through the pictures that I've just taken. Because I can't see that far out there. And so I didn't even know that you were hooked up on such a big bass. I heard you yelling, and so I'm like, okay, there must be something going on. And so I started taking pictures. But I didn't realize that you had had such a big fish until you had, like, gotten it in and you were, like, dragging it back.
Through the water? So what I was going to say just before we get into this part, which is so awesome, When I got it in and I put my boga in on its mouth and I actually knew that I caught the fish, I was like, this could be a 50-pound bass. Mm-hmm. Like, I looked at it and I was like, that is a really, really big fish. Like, extraordinarily big fish.
Yeah.
And I was like, because I've caught bass that have been like that size before that have hit 50, and I was like, I can't believe that I have somebody out here that has an incredible camera with mm-hmm. this bass being out here. And so I drag it back into the like boulder field where he is, and I was like, are you ready to see a really big fish? And I pull its head out of the water.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh my God, it's a beast.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was so funny because you've never seen
a fish like that. I had never seen a striped bass that size. Like, we filmed Coastline the year before, and I had filmed with you a ton that summer, and
yeah.
you had only really caught like schoolies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you actually caught the big one, the 50 pounder, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
It was just our dad with a cell phone.
And yeah.
I had to make that work in the final thing.
Yeah.
So we
get that fish in, and we took one photo of me. I dragged it up onto a seaweed mat that was getting washed with water. So it was really like we were trying to take good care of this fish, and there's an incredible photo. It's my favorite photo probably of the whole year.
Yeah.
That he took a photo up from the tail of the bass, which was probably 15 inches wide. It was from the flat broom-like tail of the fish up the side of the fish to me, like holding onto the mouth of the bass.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was unhooking the mm-hmm. bass, and I mean, it was an incredible fish, and we weighed that bass, and it was like a mid 40-pound bass. It was mm-hmm. over 45 pounds. I mean, we didn't weigh for that long, so we just wanted to lift it up, get a quick weight on it, and get it back in the water. And it was mm-hmm. over 45 pounds. It definitely wasn't 50, but it was over 45 pounds, which is like extraordinary fish.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it into the water, and there's one picture of me trying to hold this bass up, and I couldn't hold the bass. Because generally when I hold the fish, I try to hold it out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I couldn't hold this bass out. I almost had to brace it on my leg because the fish was so heavy. I was like trying to curl this bass up.
Yeah.
And not that like it's that heavy that I couldn't curl it. It's that a fish is kind of awkwardly weighted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's trying to move around a lot. And like it's like kicking and stuff. Because again, I fight my fish super hard. So it's super lively when we have it in there. And I lifted up, and we got some really awesome photos of it, and maybe he'll put them in if he's going through this. And then we put it in the water, and we got some even better photos of releasing this bass.
Mm-hmm.
We revived it probably for, I don't know, maybe 15 seconds, and then it started really kicking. And I pick up the bass, and I slap its tail really hard, and just as the fish is going to the water, it just douses me with water. And there's a picture of me like leaning back as this giant wave from the tail of the fish, like throwing water back at me, of the fish taking off. I mean, it was it was my best fish of the season, but it was so awesome that he was there to, you know,
and
take the pictures and video of it.
And as I mentioned, the flash is sort of difficult to work with this camera. So mm-hmm. I was having to like hit the test button, like the pilot button, as I was taking the picture. So because the like settings that we had, I just had to like press it as I was taking the picture, which is really not ideal.
Yeah.
But it meant that when you were trying to hold the bass up, I was like trying to get the camera settings and trying to take the picture.
That's
and
why
it's difficult because we're trying to move quickly and,
mm-hmm.
and like it's for me, especially I don't spend a lot of time taking pictures like this, and hopefully I will more next season.
Yeah.
I end up just taking, it's difficult with how quickly we're working for me to take a bunch of pictures.
Because we, like, when we're taking these photos, we probably have the bass out of the water for maybe, like, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, in like, total. Like, I unhook the fish, I lift it up, and we're taking, like, 5 seconds of photos, and the fish is going back in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we'll revive it a little bit, and I'll pull it up just a little bit out of the water, and we'll take some more photos.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my priorities to try to keep the bass alive,
mm-hmm.
And the photos are a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to get some great photos and video. He got a great video of me holding up one of the four. I mean, you were out there for a couple 40s that we got that year.
Yeah.
So there's another video of me holding up a 40 pounder on the boga, and he's reading out the weight of it.
I think that was that fish.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we, So we've done. So we got some video of it, and I hope that you guys had a chance. By the time this is out, we're actually editing like a highlight reel of the season. And it's so awesome because just being able to relive this epic season for me has just been incredible. And I've been so like I've been so fortunate to, you know, catch a bunch of really big fish when a lot of people have been struggling, and it's been a very fun season, especially with getting a little bit of photos that were really, really nice. I mean, it's one thing to catch a big fish, but it's another thing to catch a big fish and get a really nice photo of it. So I wanted to I have other stuff written down for what I had questions and stuff for you.
I mean, I can talk a little bit more about like why I use the camera I use.
So why do you use the Lumix GH5?
So if you're in the filmmaking world at all, or it's not necessarily a camera that people were super excited about in terms of photography. Like it takes like high quality pictures. But the main thing that people have been excited about this camera for is the video capability. Its predecessor was the GH4, which was very popular among people who do a lot of video work. And the good thing about the GH5 is I can take like 4K footage at 60 frames per second, and I can like take like 1080p footage at like 180 frames per second, so I can get some nice slow-mo. The sensor isn't particularly big, like since it's a crop sensor, and that also means that you sacrifice the low light capability of the camera, which is kind of difficult for our specific needs. But for the most part, and especially also in terms of like color science and just overall like consistency, it's a great like tool for filmmaking. It also has a great image stabilization, which means that I don't have to use like a camera stabilizer most of the time, and like handheld shots are nice and steady, which is a big thing because it's less gear for me to carry. And it's also weather sealed, which helps like immensely with what we're doing.
Because I mean, that night that we were out there, it was a new moon and it was foggy, so it couldn't have been darker at that time. And so it being foggy out is not good for a lot of cameras, but that camera's fine when it's super foggy out. It was like almost misting rain. It was that foggy, which was really cool in that photo of me like trying to unhook that fish, because you could see the water droplets in the air shimmering around the bass. Again,
just and an that's incredible photo. Just also at night in general, like with that kind of a flash, like you see a lot of the water in the air, even if it's not that foggy, which makes it difficult to see things that are farther away. But I think we got some cool shots, and that's one of my favorites. It's the one of you standing on the rock. I think you just posted that recently.
So when this has been recorded, I posted it the day before because we were talking about this photo. And I wanted you to talk about when you didn't know I hooked in what I hooked, right?
I don't think I was even looking through that one specifically, but that picture of you holding the fish up, I that was like the first time that I sort of saw it from a distance was that picture. And it's also the other thing that's difficult about doing this stuff at night is that the autofocus on the camera doesn't really do anything because it's so dark. So you have to sort of manually focus and kind of guess how far away he is in order to get the focus to look good, especially with because that's what I was talking about with the wide open aperture. The depth of field means that there's a sort of small like window that's in focus. So you can actually probably see this even right now if you're watching the video podcast, that this microphone is probably out of focus. And that's because the focus point is set right on Finn, so that he'll be in focus and I'll be in focus. But because the window is so narrow that's in focus, the microphone will be out of focus even though it's just a couple feet in front of us.
And so we have so much going on in the world of filming for next season. I just want to make sure this is going in our timeline right now of what we're doing. I mean, so the other crazy big giant project that nobody knows about that is going to happen is this 3-year project that me and Gus have been working on for we're working on like the whole like how is this going to be planned out to work the best, but we're going to drop the news in the podcast because nobody knows about this. Mm-hmm. We're doing a striped bass conservation documentary. It's going to be a multi-year project, but we're trying to like do this. Hopefully we do a really tasteful, well done documentary on the striped bass conservation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to elaborate more on it.
Yeah. So with having like done Coastline last year, I think we want to focus more on sort of the conservation aspect of striped bass fishing, especially with Finn being such a like young fisherman, and just we want the fish to still be around.
In the next 15 years, yeah. I would like to still be catching striped bass.
Yeah, and I think that we want to sort of do a comprehensive look at this issue and sort of what's actually going on with striped bass, and being able to look at it through the lens of someone like Finn, who is so invested in striped bass fishing. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to talk to a bunch of different people who have more knowledge about striped bass conservation than we do.
Yes.
And it's going to be very sort of interview based, and we're going to sort of go around and talk to people who do this for a living, and people who are experts in conservation and that kind of stuff. But this is a project that's going to take a while for us to actually do.
Yep.
Because we sort of need to start somewhere. We need to start getting interviews. We need to plan out how this is going to work, because I don't want this to be a boring documentary. I want this to be something that's interesting for people to watch, regardless of what you think about the issue.
Yes. And then the other thing I wanted to just add is, if you like, number one, are like, want to help us with this documentary, there's a few things that we really would love for everybody out there to help us with. And one of them is like finding music for the documentary and stuff like that is very difficult for us. So if you know anything about like music and stuff like that, and want to help us with that, we would much appreciate it. And also, if you are big in striped bass conservation, please DM me and I at least spark a conversation about it, and maybe you'll be interviewed for the documentary. And it's going to be a lot bigger than me, and this is going to be like a 3-year project probably.
Yeah.
It's not going to be focused on me in general. I might be doing some interviews, but I want this to be more like the community of fishermen, in this video, or this documentary, because I think that the best way that I know how to contribute to the striped bass conservation is through social media. And one way that we are pretty good at is the whole filming. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that is a very, is a good way for us to, try to at least spark a more in-depth conversation about the conservation aspect of the striped bass fishery.
Yeah.
So that's just our little piece on that, because we're super excited about it, and there's still so much more in the works behind the scenes, and it's pretty awesome that I have a chance to like to work with like interesting people and talk to interesting people about really cool things like the striped bass and the striped bass conservation. So it's going to be hopefully a fun project to do. And then the other thing, I just need to keep looking at exactly what's going on. I wanted to talk a little bit about our design.
Yeah. Well, we also need to talk about the show.
Oh yeah.
So this next season, we're also going to be sort of trying to do a like TV show style, project. Yeah. And it's going to be sort of on like a 2-week cycle, where I'm going to be filming him just pretty much constantly, filming and like taking pictures and stuff. And we're going to sort of try to do almost like a TV show, as I said, that would like release once a week. And I'm excited about it because I've done some documentary stuff. I've done some sort of short, like music based stuff. But I want to try to do something that's more, like on this kind of a rolling deadline style of like content. And I think that it's going to be a lot of work, definitely, and a lot of sort of planning and organizing. But I think it'll be really cool if we can pull this off. I think it'll be really cool for people to be able to watch. Because obviously we sort of have the like quality of filmmaking, and I'm not a fisherman myself. It gives me the opportunity to really just focus on filming him the whole time. Yeah. And that's what comes first instead of like my own fishing.
Yeah. So that's a really cool part. Cause a lot of the people that do this whole fishing and like photography stuff are also fishermen. Yeah. He's not a fisherman. So what it does is it makes it, So it takes he's not fishing while I'm on a good bite and doesn't really care about getting on that good bite because he doesn't fish. He'll be more focused on the filming aspect of it than like wanting to be catching fish.
Yeah.
Which helps a lot during the whole filming process, instead of him having to give up fishing.
Yeah. And this is also something that it's like, I don't want to do this like sort of what's been done before, as in like I don't want it to just be completely focused on the fishing above everything else. I want this to have entertainment value, as like each episode having like a story arc, and each episode sort of having like a beginning, middle, and end, and like a and of something that is exciting to watch, even if you aren't necessarily that interested in fishing, but that also sort of provides the fishing content that people who are into fishing want to see. It's going to be interesting to try to like figure out that balance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's something that, especially if we have a lot of chances to get it right, then we'll be able to do it.
Yeah. And I'm super excited for this because, a big part of like the fishing or how I started fishing was watching videos online about how to like target striped bass. So now you'll be able to see, like literally see, exactly how I target striped bass. There's going to be other fish species that we go for, but it's going to be mostly striped bass like based fishing. It's going to be very interesting to see how it goes. And I hope it's going to be like, we're trying to make it as interesting and as fun for you guys to watch as possible. So it'll be an interesting view of like how I fish, and it's also going to be filmed in a third person perspective, which is something I've been asked to do a lot of times about like, oh, can we see you fishing in a third person perspective?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, because that's something that I don't think is done really at all, especially for striped bass fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to film, have you film in that aspect, that like way, and I'm also excited to hopefully catch some nice fish on film.
Yeah, and it's something that's sort of challenging for me also, which is going to be fun because, again, fishing is the best when it's the worst conditions for me.
Yeah.
So this is something that I'm going to need to figure out, and I'll be trying to sort of document that process of figuring out the best way to do it, and that'll be somewhere, I don't know, but basically, yeah. We're gonna need to figure out how I can get out there and actually get right into the action to film these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just do it with a GoPro because that's kind of a cop out. I feel like I want to maintain that quality of filmmaking while still being able to be right in the action.
Yes.
And like film all these catches. And that's gonna be something I'm gonna have to figure out with like lighting and with protecting the camera from water.
Mm-hmm.
and like being able to bring all my gear out there with me. And so we're gonna sort of figure that out, and hopefully we can get people who want to be involved in this and fish with other people and get a bunch of cool stuff that people want
to
watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do some like collaborating on stuff as well during this whole fishing process, so we'll see how that everything works out in this next season. I mean, I have a few things in the works, but it's going to be a very fun season because the behind the scenes part of it is going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is I'm going to start uploading videos to YouTube, just like how-to videos and like I would say vlog-esque stuff for just because, like, I do a lot of interesting things in the off season, and I like organize my gear in specific ways that I think are that not a lot of people do, and I think it's really cool stuff like that that I feel like people will be interested in. So I'm gonna do a lot of videos about like organization and how to keep your stuff like, you know, in good shape throughout the winter and be prepared for the next season. And that's the fun part about the fall, the like winter. I mean, it sucks that there's no striped bass fishing at this time, and I don't do any like fishing during the winter, just because I like catching bluegills in a pond, but like I don't go and like actively try to target like panfish like when it's freezing cold out. So I just spend most of my time like organizing gear, sharpening hooks, tying flies. I mean, I do a lot of stuff, and that's something that I don't think I've posted at all about, is I did less of it this season, but I have in the past fly fished a good amount for striped bass, especially when we filmed the season that we filmed Coastline. I was catching so many small fish that I was like, screw this, I'm gonna go light tackle on like to catch these fish. So I literally, without any knowledge of fly fishing, just got a fly rod and started fishing. And like, yeah, I can cast a little bit, but like I know nothing about fly fishing. So that'll be a lot of fun to have people help me learn how to fly fish, because I really don't know how to fly fish that well. And so that will be in the show. You'll be able to see me do some fly fishing and try to target striped bass in a few pretty unique ways. And then you'll be able to see how I target really large fish and what I look for. And then hopefully that you can apply that to your location and how you catch your own fish. So we have like the documentary, which is kind of in the background for the next few years. And then we'll have the show, which, you know, if you want to like help contribute to the show, just DM me anything you want to either see or want to help me with, and we can talk about that. Because what I like is interacting with the fishing community, and like, because that's what I think is awesome about the striped bass fishing community, is that there's some really awesome guys out there and people that really, you know, love the sport and want to better the sport. And I think that's super cool. So if anybody wants to do anything and help us in any way, just DM me on Instagram. So what else we have? So this is a big problem that we have for this. I wouldn't say a big problem, but something that we would really appreciate is we're starting to create a design and some like t-shirts and stuff.
Pay for the documentary and the show and stuff, because it's going to be a lot of time and energy, and I've spent all my money on film equipment, and he spent all his money on fishing gear. And so we're going to sort of set up a like limited edition like striped bass hunt shirt, and we'll just to like raise money for the show. So if you want a cool shirt, I'm going to do my best to design something that I would wear myself.
I mean, it's something that's like that I think it's a cool t-shirt in general. What we have a rough draft of it, and I think the t-shirt that we have right now is going to be a really awesome t-shirt. It's not going to be really like too much promoting me in general, but it will be more like, it's just a really cool t-shirt. You'll have to see when it comes out. Hopefully it'll come out before this is posted.
We'll try to work on that today.
That's like something we need to do. We have a lot. I have so much stuff. I mean, this is before Thanksgiving right now when we're recording this. In the next 2 weeks, he's home right now for Thanksgiving. So we're just going to be grinding out, trying to get a lot of stuff done, because there's so much that is going on behind the scenes that I'm super excited about. And hopefully within the next few months, we can, you know, tell everybody else what's going on, and stuff will actually become a reality about what's happening. So I don't know what else I have for us. I guess we have questions.
And we would sort of go into that a little
bit, which should hopefully spark more conversation. Just have to pull them up right now.
I
got them up right now.
Okay.
Okay, so the first one is, what is the cameraman's background? So what is your background?
Where's that question from? That's from RGAustin_418. What's my background? So I has started out mostly in filmmaking, and it's something that I've always been really interested in, and it's something that I've that like, especially with Coastline, that was sort of my first major project that I spent a long time on. And it's something that I want to sort of pursue professionally at some point. And that's sort of where it all started. And I taught myself a lot through, and this is something that Finn's done with fishing, but yeah. I've taught myself a lot through YouTube and through online resources, that mm-hmm. like how to edit and like how to like film things. And I've just sort of built up my knowledge of filmmaking, just on my own. I've never taken a filmmaking class. It's just been me trying to get better at what I enjoy doing, and just putting hours into editing and putting hours into filming things.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to a point where I am happy with the result that I'm producing. And like applying it to fishing for Coastline was sort of the first time that we had really, well, I guess we had made a fishing video a while ago.
But, yeah, it's nothing.
When you were,
but so the crazy thing is like, all like it's, for us, the fishing is like something that we can focus on, because we used to do films for other things. Like he yeah. would do a lot of music videos for people and stuff yeah. like that. But we never had like a thing that we could like pursue in film until I started getting really, really like good at fishing. And then we were able to start filming some fishing videos. And the problem that we've had is not being able to like get them out there onto the internet. Even though they're stuff that we believe people would love to see, and it's yeah. done better now that I've been able to promote it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But it's awesome because all of the like filming and editing is all way over my head. Like I can't edit with Adobe Premiere to save my life. I don't know. I don't know half the things that he was talking about at the beginning of the podcast about the camera. But I mean, the way, like how good I am at fishing is, he's equal or not better at filmmaking in that regard. So like, it's so awesome that we both have these two really cool passions, but and we're both pretty good at these cool passions, and we're able to put them together to make something that is truly awesome. Yeah. So that's really fun and cool for me to be able to, like, because I, like, on my own, I wouldn't have been able to do any filming, because mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that or take any good photos. But
and that's also tough to do on your own. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, we, just a disclaimer, the camera might die in a second, so I might have to grab another battery. But I'll keep an eye on that, and if it dies, then we'll just pause for a second. Okay, we're back.
Yeah.
Camera died, as
as he said. Well, we can just cut it right after you said camera died.
Yeah.
I was gonna die. Okay. So it's the next question.
So Bassman. Basserman underscore asks, will he share the metadata on the image files?
Okay, he's probably trying to ask about being able to see where I fish, but
I don't have a GPS like module on my camera, so I don't, it doesn't, like the metadata doesn't have GPS locations. I might be able to figure out a way to show, like, because I know the metadata also keeps track of like the focal length and the like camera settings that I was using, so that might be worth trying to figure out. But I also don't have like Photoshop or Lightroom or anything, so all of the like photo editing stuff that I do is just in like this free app called Snapseed, which just allows you to like edit the like contrast and exposure and the usual things like that, and it has like other effects on it that you can put on the photos. So I used that to edit some of Finn's pictures, and yeah, so that was, if you want to know the specifics of camera settings, I can try to figure out how to share those, but yeah.
I'm any just other trying to find a question.
I think there was one asking about the...
Somebody asked me a question. Oh yeah, so...
Oh, so this is a question for Finn. Why did you get away from Lama Glass?
So which I've definitely not. I mean, I love Lama Glass rods, and I fish Lama Glass rods, like all season. All my biggest bass came on a 9'2" GSB blank from Lambglass. And so, like, but the only reason, like, he's probably, the only reason he's probably saying that is I have a Century rod behind me because some people helped me get my hands on a Century rod, and I would love, then I just happen to have my room, and so I just threw it in the background. That's why. I've talked about that a little bit, but I fish with a lot of different rods. I fish with, like, St. Croix, Penn, Lambglass, and then now Century. So, and I fish with a lot of different rods. And so, and ODM, actually. I fish with ODM as well. So I fish with pretty much all the rod companies. And so I love just, I like a lot of the rods that a lot of different companies use. I just use the rods that I think are the best. So if I happen to have a specific rod, like a Lambglass rod that I like, I'm going to use that. Or if I have a Century rod that I think is better, I'm going to use that. But not saying that the Century rod's better, and I haven't been able to test it out to the extent that I want to yet. So I can't really tell you what rod is my favorite rod out of all those companies. Right now I can say that I really like the GSB series rods. So if I was to suggest like one rod, I would suggest the GSB series from Lambglass. I mean, it's just a solid rod. I really have no complaints about it because it's just a really solid rod.
So that question's from Backwoods Boss Man. So
yeah,
thanks for the question.
Yep. So what else do I have? No. Okay.
So there's a question from MS Chubb 50. Get rid of the rear treble.
So this I actually pulled from like one of my posts. It was actually of a Magnum Walker, which had two trebles on it. So I wanted to just bring this up into the pod, up for the podcast. It was actually this plug right here. If you're watching on the podcast, you'll be able to see it. So I just happen to have two trebles on this is because it's sold with two trebles. But there is going to be an option at some point on for Pumbaa Plugs, which is the plug company I work with. For having a single tail hook for the plugs, and also being able to pick what size VMC hooks you want for like the belly hooks of it. So if you want like a 4X strong, or if you want like a 6 or an 8X strong, I think you can get like those. You'll be able to get those like different be able to get the hook strengths that you want instead of having to mess around and put on your own hooks. They will come with like the hooks that you would end up putting on your rod. Or that, like, honestly, like, because the reason I wanted to have that as an option is because I had bent out a few that were like 4X strong VMCs. And I know, and just because I fight my fish super, super hard. So I was like, we should have an option for a heavier hook. So like this Metal Lip Swimmer, I think these are 6X strong VMCs, which will not break. Like, you have to be like, maybe if you're fishing like lockdown drag in the canal, maybe you could bend out a 6X strong VMC hook. But I mean, that's pretty difficult to do. So what I'm getting at is there's going to be options for single tail hooks on a lot of the plugs. So I just wanted to bring that up during the podcast. Okay. And then, and this is a great one for this, is, I guess we're going
to go first. So this is H Thayer 1. I think that's what it's supposed to be. What are you using for a camera? So this is one that we've already answered. Lumix GH5. And yeah, I've been really happy with it. I've had it for a couple years. I might need to get a longer lens if we're doing the show, because I want to get some tighter shots on the like blow ups and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we've done videos where we were like in the harbor and we were catching, like, we had some cool videos where we were in the harbor and there was like, you know, 25 inch bass eating this small like topwater plugs, and we put that in a little compilation. Which is on my Instagram, so if you dig back in the photos, you'll be able to find that. And it's really awesome because, like, we were able to get some cool slow motion shots of the blow-ups, but I was like, oh my gosh, can you imagine, like, a 30-pound bass. Because I guess I can tell another story where if we had a camera with a longer lens and filming in slow motion for this, it would have been an epic, you know, scene. So I've told the story a little bit of the previous day for this story, but I was fishing and it was like early season. I was before I really got a really big bass, and I lost like a low 40-inch bass on a pencil popper, and which was crazy because I was like not expecting it because I was fishing for schoolies and I had light gear for me, and by light gear I mean I had my Vanstall VSX 200 and I had it on my 9'2" Lamglass rod, GSB Lamglass rod. And I had 50-pound braid, but it was to a 50-pound leader, which I don't normally fish 50-pound leader, especially in this area. And people are going to be, like, freaking out about this. But, like, if you've listened to any of the podcasts, you'll know that I like fishing extremely heavy stuff.
It's like the rain.
It's like hailing out right now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was fishing with the pencil, and I hooked into this bass, and I had my drag a little bit looser because I was catching a bunch of like 20-inch schoolies, so I wasn't fully expecting a 40-inch bass to hit this pencil, and it was also a small pencil too, and it eats the pencil and takes off probably, you know, a 30-yard run, then gets me into the rocks, and I snap off on this bass. So I was really frustrated, but I woke up really early the next day, and I went to the same spot. I mean, it was probably 3:30 in the morning when I got out there on the rocks. I got out to the spot, and I literally, so there was a boulder, but it was like pretty far out there, and I swam out to that boulder. It was dark out. I swam all the way out to the boulder and set up. I got ready. I mean, I was going to catch a big fish that day. And I probably fished from 3:30 to maybe 7 o'clock. With no hits. And the tide started to go down. It was towards the end of the, like, I got out there at high tide, and I was probably, you know, at the lower end of mid tide, and the current was really ripping by the spot, and it really started this huge, like, current break by this boulder. And I cast it out further than I had the entire day, because I thought they'd be in the same spot that I hooked that big one the other day. And, I start working in this popper, this pencil, and it was really, you know, I was thrashing it. I was working it perfectly. And all of a sudden, I see this big swirl behind the plug, and I'm like, okay, here we go. Finally, I have a fish coming up for it. And I didn't think it was giant, but, like, I would have taken anything at that point because I hadn't caught anything in hours. And then all of a sudden, it starts smashing it on the surface. And, I mean, hit the popper probably 6 feet out of the water. It lands on the surface of the water, and I twitch it once. And the fish swirled up on it, but it didn't hit it. So then I started working it frantically again. The bass comes back for it, and it's hitting it out of the water. It hits it out of the water again, and it lands in the water. I pause it for only a second, start working again. The bass hits it again, this time jumping clear out of the water. And I got to see the full fish, and it was easily a 45-inch bass. I mean, it was enormous. And the whole fish came out of the water. This time, at this point, it was probably 15 yards away from me. So it was pretty close at this point. And then I kept working in, and it kept hitting it and blowing up. And all of a sudden, I was working it by a boulder. It was probably 5 feet away from me. It was, or not 5 feet, it was probably 10 feet away from me. And there was a rock that was just out of the water a little bit. The bass hits the plug up in the air, and it lands on the rock beside it. And I'm like yanking on it as it's stuck to the rock, trying to get it off. And I kind of finally rip it off the seaweed, but there's a little seaweed on it. And I'm ripping it in, trying to give it some action with a little bit of seaweed on it. The bass is just swirling behind it. And then I reel it up to my feet, and I can't, no more room. And I didn't catch the bass. But in that story, I mean, it sucked that I didn't catch that fish. But if you can only imagine having a longer lens on that, yeah, being able to see a 45-inch bass sky out of the water for a plug, mm-hmm, is, like, you don't see that every day. That would have been extraordinarily epic scene, especially in slow motion. Yeah, I can't imagine that, like, the videos that were taken in the harbor. So hopefully next season during the show, we'll have some interesting stuff like that go down. Mm-hmm. And I guess that shows you a little bit about how long that I fish without hits before I actually catch some fish. So it's not immediate every time. I mean, I'm fishing for hours upon hours before, yeah, I get a single hit.
And he's out there like every single day over during the season. Mm-hmm. I don't think he takes a single day off.
No, like I fish every single day. I mean, I literally fish every day until the bass are gone. From the time I caught my first fish. It was like May 3rd of this season was when I caught my first fish. I caught my last fish like November 1st. But I knew there's still bass around November, like after, like at the first week in November, I knew there were still bass around in the back bays. I just didn't go grinding for schoolie bass in the back bays, which is like, I mean, it's like, you can go do that, but I was like lacking motivation at that point to go really drive a long way to find these fish and walk hours when to catch some schoolies. But that's the thing. It's like, I've had questions about like, when does my season start? When does my end? And I the last podcast we did was fall versus spring. So it gives you like how I attack both shoulder seasons, which are surprisingly like similar, but a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So that's a really awesome podcast if you want to listen to that. I think we're kind of nearing the natural end of this podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
So thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. Again, if you have any questions for the podcast, DM me on Instagram or on YouTube, and I will feature them in the next podcast. So
yeah, I'm around for the next week, and we're gonna try to get some stuff done. We're gonna do a weekly update after this.
Yep.
And yeah. I don't know how you sign off from these.
Well, we talked about this in the last podcast. We wanted to have some way of signing off, but we don't. But yeah. Thank you guys for watching, and I hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll see you in the next podcast.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's it.